welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Folks, when was the last time you did an energy audit? Not an inspection as to how much electricity your house is consuming, but rather a check on your own time and personal energy. Our guest today is an expert on this topic, and she'll be diving into what this is and why you should be doing one. Ambika Kadse is a talent development leader, inclusion advocate, and founder of her consultancy, The Flourish Compass. Her experience spans over 15 years in Fortune 15 companies, where she works with individuals across various functions and levels. She's presented and spoke at numerous events, including the Social Connections Summit with Patterns of Possibility, the Queen's Chamber of Commerce, and the Mount Vernon Mental Health Symposium in Mount Vernon, New York. She was also a guest on the Sea Captain podcast, where I took in that episode just a few days ago. Alongside her professional career, Ambika is a 20-year yoga practitioner and a 7-year yoga teacher. A newly minted Toastmaster, Ambika is the Vice President of Education for the Toast of Queens Toastmasters. Ambika has also contributed to Differentiate Magazine, a publication for health and wellness practitioners, and of course, the Toastmaster Magazine, which is why she is here today. Her article, Where Does Your Time Go? Use an Energy Audit to Pause, Evaluate, and Implement New Habits, appears in the January 2026 issue of the Toastmaster Magazine. Coming to us today from the Big Apple, I love saying that. Ambika Kadse, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited to be here, Greg.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, Ambika, this topic is absolutely perfect for this time of year. But in reality, where does my time go? I think about that literally every single day. Your article starts with that familiar question, but then I love the fact that it leads us to this deeper one. Where is my energy going? Why is making that shift so important? Why is it so important to include energy with looking at time?
Greg, that's a great question, right? And as you mentioned, it's something people think about when they think about time management every day. How do you fit more into our days? How to be most effective? How do we do more with less? But if we're looking at blocking our time on our calendars, we usually don't consider our energy levels throughout the day. And those energy levels vary at different points. So some people are morning people, some people are night owls, right? So knowing when you have higher or lower levels of energy can impact the tasks you're able to get done, right? And impact the time you've allocated for each of those tasks. So we want to consider the energy levels with the tasks we're doing. So that's why I make that shift going from time management into the energy audit first.
Oh, that's interesting. I know in some organizations, especially for those who are in an office, for example, they have to work 9 to 5. Meetings are always at 10 a.m. Monday morning, but yet that's not your best energy time. I can see that. I can see that being a challenge. Yeah.
10 a.m. is a lucky meeting time, not 8 or 9.
Or 7:30 a.m.?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I know in our district conferences, we used to have our executive committee meetings. It was a weekend conference, and it would be 7 a.m. on Sunday morning after you've been up all night.
Oh, that's a tough one.
I'm curious, Ambika, what was it that first prompted you to start thinking about this? Did something specifically happen to you? Or how did this awareness affect you personally?
Yeah, so time management is something I've been running workshops and teaching for a while. My background is, as you mentioned, talent development. And in 2025, in January, I launched my own consultancy, The Flourish Compass. Now, using everything I knew about time management, I'm allocating my time, figuring out how to set up my business, all the things you have to do, not just now, not just my training and my workshops, but the marketing and the logistics and the filing of paperwork and everything involved. And I'm sure many entrepreneurs can relate to this. So fast forward a bit, going through all that, I was never able to get everything done as I'm blocking my calendar and managing my time, right? So at some point, it had to be at least a couple of months in, I paused for a moment and said, well, it's not that I'm not managing the time accurately. It's more that I'm not taking into consideration my energy levels, right? I myself am a morning person, so I can be up at 6 a.m. I'd probably make it to those 7 a.m. meetings you mentioned, be energized, ready to go, right? And that's great. But am I allocating the major tasks I need to do? And when I say major, whether it be mentally exhausting or whether it be a lot of calls and interactions and engaging with other people, am I scheduling those during the times that I have the most energy, right? Maybe some of the tasks that are maybe more mundane at the times that I have lower energy. And that's where, as I started making that connection with my time blocking on my calendar, I really got to see more positive results and productivity from what I was doing.
Oh, amazing. So for you, 4:30, 5 o'clock, 5 p.m. meetings, that's not a good thing for you.
I'm usually a little exhausted by then. I obviously will take them and meet with my coworkers when I used to be in the office and so forth, but definitely a little more exhausting for me than morning.
Fair enough. Now, let's dive into this concept of energy audit. I find it very fascinating because I literally just completed an energy audit in my home because Canada has a greener homes program where if you do insulation and you do some upgrades, then you can get a rebate on your windows and things like that. So I did a physical energy audit and that just ended at the end of December. Now, obviously, we're not talking about that, but for someone who's hearing this term for the first time in your context, which I am, what exactly is it? And just as importantly, what isn't it?
Absolutely. So, as you mentioned, a different kind of energy audit here. So when I'm talking about an energy audit, it's a personal energy audit, looking at yourself. So identifying your patterns of energy levels. And I think we both touched upon this, understanding if you're a night owl, a morning person, right? And I know you know that intrinsically, but what does that mean in terms of your energy when you're applying it to work? When are you most alert? When are you most open to connecting with people, speaking with people? When do you feel most energized, right? And when do you start feeling those slumps throughout your day where you may not be as effective on what you're doing? So the idea of the energy audit is to really understand that pattern that you have and then layer on looking at different activities and stuff that may energize or drain you.
Interesting. It's funny, I'm thinking people feel busy, but they're not effective. From your experience, what's usually missing when that happens?
To me, I look at that and see people, missing an alignment generally on what you're doing, why you're doing it, and when you're doing it. So if you feel busy, but you look back and you say, oh, well, I haven't really accomplished much, it may be valuable to take a few minutes and rethink or replan that day or that week, right? And you may think, oh, I don't have time to stop for even 10 minutes, but continuing to run on that hamster wheel may be less effective than taking that time to rethink this, right? So thinking through what you're doing, what are those tasks you have laid out for the day that are making you feel busy but ineffective? Why are you doing each of them? What does each item do that moves you closer to the goal you're trying to achieve? And also, what happens if you don't complete that item, right? So you're really focused on building clarity of why you're doing what you're doing. And then from there, focusing on just the items that pass that step one, right? That they need to be done. Realistically assessing how long would it take to do each of those. And then thinking through how much energy is required to do each of those. So then you can align it to when, if it's a high energy activity, to when you have your most energy. If it's a moderate energy activity, maybe at a time that you're not as up on your energy levels there.
Ambika, from a leadership perspective, how does this, we'll call it unmanaged energy, show up in teams? We know it's there, even though no one is really talking about it.
Yeah, so if you're working within a team, right, everyone has their role to play, their, in a sense, their weight to pull to help your team accomplish things. And if you're running on your time management, your calendar, and you've allocated things to do, but again, as we mentioned earlier, you're running out of energy or your energy is not allocated appropriately and you're taking longer than necessary to do things, or you're not able to complete everything you need to do, that's where your team members start seeing, oh, well, is this person able to get what they need to be done? Does this person have the right skills? Do they lack the motivation to do this? And generally, the answer is no. It's not that they don't have the right skills or they lack the motivation. It's that they may not be considering their energy zones, right? So they're allocating everything they have to do. They're following all the time management they need to. But as they go through their day, they start getting tired at certain areas. They have slumps in certain areas. So the items allocated to that time are not being completed. And this piles up and shows up to your team members as you may not be able to complete what you need to, or you may not be qualified for the role that you're in.
Yeah, that's interesting. So for example, if there happens to be a job where there's shift work, maybe the morning shift isn't working for an individual, put them on the afternoon or the evening shift and they'll thrive.
That's a great example. Shift work is a great one, right? Can you align the shift with when you are most energized and most able to perform that work?
Let's go through this practice. What does it look like doing an energy audit? If someone wanted to start now, what's a good place? What would they do?
Yeah, so the first thing you do is start by listing out the things that you do on an average week. Like, what is everything involved in your life, right? Then approximate how long do you spend doing all those things? And then going through and checking off what are those items that you're doing that bring you more energy or happiness in a sense? And what are those items that you're doing that leave you exhausted at the end, right? And this is just to start building our awareness of what is my current level of energy? What am I currently doing? Where is that energy even going, right? From here, you'd start analyzing your own energy patterns, right? Writing down throughout your day, when are you most energized? When are your slumps in the day, right? And this is probably things you know already in your head of, oh, this is when I usually get tired. I need to go grab a coffee or a tea. And here's when I am super energized and, you know, I have a burst of energy at 10 p.m. or whatever it may be, right? And then starting to look through, well, where are the things I'm doing and my energy patterns and how do they align? So that's just a preliminary starting point.
How detailed do you get when you say list out everything you do in an average week? I mean, I could fill a book in a day.
Well, we generally keep it high level. You might want to put things into buckets. Like, yes, you have to sleep, you have to eat, maybe you exercise, you socialize with people. Then going into work areas, you might consider breaking work down into buckets, right? Are there different things you do during work? Do you have to build out strategy? Do you have to have time for executing different things? It might vary slightly for people, each individual, but I would say stick to some higher level buckets so that you're not writing an entire book.
In your experience with your clients, when people pause and actually go through this process, they track what drains them, they track what energizes them. Is there something that tends to surprise them the most?
Yes. So I would say that most people, well, usually the biggest surprise they say is how much energy and time they put towards things that are not valuable in helping them reach their goals, right? Whether it be work goals or personal goals. When they really stop and look at this, that's one thing. So they're spending time and energy on things that may not be as valuable. The second area that they say is they're allocating things that may require more energy than they thought through at times when they get tired. So for instance, a lot of people, the first thing they do when they start their work day, and generally for people working 9 to 5, they come into the office and the first thing they do is look through all their emails, right? For individuals that are morning people, their biggest awareness is, I'm most energized there, but now I'm spending the first hour or what have you going through emails and doing these administrative things versus spending that time brainstorming something I need to do when I have all this energy, this creative ideas flowing through my head. A lot of them say they're surprised at how they allocate large energy need activities with their actual energy flows.
So I guess scrolling through Facebook first thing in the morning is probably not a good idea either.
Maybe not the best use of your energy. Unless you're not a morning person, maybe then it would be.
Yeah, that's true. In the article, you write that awareness without action is just observation. Why do so many people seem to stop there? And what do you think might be a good idea to help them move from that just first step into action without being overwhelmed?
Acting on our observation first requires us to accept the observation, whether it's feedback others shared with us or whether we've actually taken the moment to notice what we're doing, right? Now, once we accept it, then the next step, the action part, is changing. And change is hard, right? People find it hard to change, especially when it's a habit we do regularly. If it's something we've been doing for years or whether it's a habit that we've just formed, it doesn't necessarily make a difference, but it takes time and effort to change that. So even things like we're talking about right now, the time planning, the energy, how do I take a moment to actually plan out my time, my day, according to my energy? Just that planning piece might take weeks for you to start doing. Again, that action step takes a lot of energy in itself to really get moving with.
The examples that you give in the article are great. And your examples seem to focus on small, intentional habits. Why are these, we'll call it micro changes, often more sustainable than big resets?
I think the beginning of the year right now is a great example for this. A lot of times people get to the beginning of the year and they set these huge resolutions. I know wellness is a big one, right? I'm going to be healthy this year and I'm going to change my diet and how I eat. But again, change is very difficult, right? It requires consistent reinforcement of what we're doing. But starting small and building up is a lot easier for our minds, our bodies to really handle. So if we start with small changes saying, hey, I'm going to start drinking more water. And it doesn't have to be X ounces or 70 ounces of water each day or 50 ounces or whatever it is, but just start saying, oh, I'm going to start with one cup and slowly building up to two cups or whatever it may be. Those little pieces, those little steps help us build to larger areas. When we try to, in a sense, bite off too much, we stumble through it.
Yeah, I love in the article where you give those two examples. One of them is the mental well-being and the other one is the relationships, and you have the three steps, awareness, action, and habit. With the water, I was in that situation where I wasn't drinking enough water. So what I started doing is I wear a Fitbit. So I started putting, every time I had water, I would put it in my Fitbit and then it would come back and say, hey, you need to drink more water. And after a while, it became a habit.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we have so many tools and technology now that can help us build those habits, right? Like you said, your Fitbit gave you those reminders. So you kept drinking that water and it helped you form that habit without necessarily thinking through it, right? But for activities we may not have a Fitbit for, we are that Fitbit, right? And we have to really set that reminder for ourselves, or you could set that reminder in your phone or computer, but we have to really take that initiative to take that action.
Now, Ambika, I'm sure some people try these energy audits and they work very successfully. Some of them might try, stumble through it, and then just say, you know what, this isn't working for me. Is there a common mistake that people might make, and how can they rectify that?
I wouldn't say there are mistakes necessarily. I will say that this is something you have to, similar to anything, do consistently, right? So a one-time look at yourself and your energy and your time isn't going to be the same throughout the year even. So we think of ourselves and we have different activities, different things going on within our lives as we go through our year. So this is something you'd have to do consistently every, let's say, couple of months in a sense to say, all right, am I using my energy the same way? Do I have different things on my plate in my life? What is going on? So if it's not working, I necessarily wouldn't say that they're doing something wrong, but it's more, have things changed in your life that you now need to reassess and include into your energy audit?
That makes sense. So you're saying that every couple of months you want to do it, or is there a better time, or does it depend on the individual?
I would generally say start with doing it every quarter. Maybe as the seasons change, definitely our energy levels fluctuate with seasons at times as well. So that would be a good starting point of saying every 3 months, I'll redo this energy audit, see if things have changed for me, things have changed in my life, things that I need to spend energy on have also fluctuated with the different months that we've gone through. That's a good starting point. And then as you become more comfortable and familiar with it, you can decide if you need to do it more often or further apart.
So make sure that you put it on your calendar at a day and time where you have the most energy, so you're more likely to do it.
Exactly.
Well, Ambika, I guess now people have a different view as to what an energy audit actually is. Now, to help people kick off 2026, to help perhaps get them started on their own energy audit, can you please share with us an example as to how this energy audit perhaps played out for someone?
Absolutely. So one group I was working with, an individual shared with me that they started their energy audit and started noticing that they felt less overwhelmed or anxious on days that included physical movement for them. So the action they started taking was including a 5-minute stretch, sometimes a walk, sometimes a stretch in the morning. And when it wasn't possible in the morning, they tried at 3 p.m. when they took a quick break to grab coffee. Now, of course, this wasn't something that they were able to do every day right away. But as they kept putting those reminders in their phones, on their computers, it started becoming a daily habit to get that movement in, which in that cycle of what they were noticing helped them feel less overwhelmed, less anxious, and then impacted their energy level as they got going and working on tasks throughout that day.
Well, I think that's a perfect example, Ambika, and it reminds me of my conversation with accredited speaker Lauren Parsons, which ironically was January the 1st of 2025. And one of the things that she spoke about was to build resistance and to thrive. She introduced a concept of snacking on exercise. So in the morning, instead of looking at Facebook or my email while I'm waiting for the coffee to brew, I actually do some mini exercises against the wall that's in the kitchen. And it works. It's a habit that I've developed and I do it all the time.
That's fantastic. And I love the snacking on exercises.
I'll certainly put a link to that in the show notes for those who are interested. And because I mentioned earlier, you're a newly minted Toastmaster. How did you discover our wonderful organization?
Yeah, so I had some exposure to Toastmasters when I was working within corporate organizations, and they had a in-house Toastmasters group. So I had popped in a couple of times, got some familiarity with what Toastmasters was. So as I launched my own organization in 2025, I joined Toastmasters really to help me work on building more clarity, building more conciseness in how I was connecting with others and presenting about, yes, what I do, but also the networking piece and talking to individuals. So that really drove me to join Toastmasters. And, you know, it's really helped because as you know, Greg, it's an organization that provides such great feedback, such great insights to how we are speaking, how we are presenting. And they're immediate pieces of information, immediate feedback. So it really helps you adjust quite quickly into what you need to do to improve yourself.
That's a great opportunity as an entrepreneur.
Definitely.
Well, folks, if you're ready to start off 2026 with an energy audit and you found this episode helpful and useful and encouraging, I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcast. And Ambika, before we leave, if you'd be so kind as to tell us a little bit about the Flourish Compass, and if someone would like to reach out to find out more about what you do or to find out more about having an energy audit done, not an electrical one, but a personal one, what's the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. So the Flourish Compass, as we mentioned, is a talent development consultancy, and I specialize in change leadership, competency model development for small and mid-sized businesses, as well as leadership skills training. And you can reach me at www.theflourishcompass.com or email me at theflourishcompass@gmail.com. And I actually have on my website a short worksheet about a personal energy audit under the resources. So feel free to jump on and grab that.
That's excellent. And we'll certainly put that information in the show notes. And don't forget to read Ambika's article, Where Does Your Time Go? Use an Energy Audit to Pause, Elevate, and Implement New Habits. And that's in the January 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Ambika Katse, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. And I'm certainly off to do another energy audit, but this time a different one.
Well, thank you so much, Greg. It's been a pleasure being on the podcast, and I look forward to hearing it go live.
Awesome.